Welcome back to Proverbs, everyone. Chapter 16 today, which includes a series of verses about our plans and God's purposes. Wherein the two of those meet is a challenge for all of us. Chase Acuna and Peyton Jones are with me again, and I have to admit these verses hit close to home for me because I'm a planner. I dream big and I plan big. Vision, ideas, and projects are just part of how I'm wired. But the difference between my vision and reality is often a long stretch. Things just don't always work out on my timeline. So how do we walk through that? And where does God enter in? We're searching for wisdom on plans and several other topics here in chapter 16. So I'm going to start us out at verse 1. To humans belong the plans of the heart, but from the Lord comes the proper answer of the tongue. Now, this one slowed me down a bit. To humans, that's me and you, belong the plans of the heart. God gives us that. He gifted us with hearts that dream and imagine and plan. We dream up what to say, do, to become. But then it says, from the Lord comes the proper answer of the tongue. So what does that mean? Maybe it means he gives you the right answer, the right thing to say at the right time. Or maybe it harkens back to God speaking the universe into being. Only his word can create. Only his plans will stand. I don't know for sure. I want to dwell on that one a little longer. So let's keep looking for wisdom. Chase, what do you think about this one?
You know, Chris, this made me think about the ways that I could look back on my past, on things that didn't work out the way I'd planned, and recognize that God actually had something so much better than I did. God is really gracious, and he's also gracious in the way that he deals with us, even while knowing our different motives. So right now, I want to share from Proverbs 16:2, where it talks a little bit about that. It says, all a person's ways seem pure to them, but motives are weighed by the Lord. This verse would point out that almost as important as what one does is the reason one is doing it, because God knows all. You know, it's always intrigued me how in the Gospels we're given many examples of religious leaders of Jesus' day who were experts in Old Testament scriptures, yet whose piety was not driven by actual love for God, but actually driven by pride, power, selfish ambition, and the approval of others. They spent their entire lives studying the truth, yet completely missed knowing the one who the scriptures were ultimately pointing to. They were doing very good things, but the real reasons for doing them were severely lacking. In contrast, Jesus taught in Matthew 6, the things that we do for him in faith and obedience to him, he sees that and will reward it in ways that last for eternity.
That's so good. And that speaks well into our plans, how we go about planning things. We always like to presume that our own plans are pure and noble, but God weighs our motives. What are we really after? And I think verse 3 adds to that. Commit to the Lord whatever you do, and he will establish your plans. Commit to the Lord whatever you do, and he will establish your plans. Think about that one. Commit to the Lord. Whatever you do it for him. Now, I'm quite certain that doesn't mean you can just take your selfish plans and commit them to God. Sin is always sin, and it's always against God. And my selfish ambition is never godly. Philippians 2 says, do nothing out of selfish ambition. That is idolatry. But here, committing your plans to the Lord means committing them to his purpose, his glory. Put the selfish part on the altar and do it all unto the Lord. Let Jesus be your one pure motive. But you still have to plan. God is not generally in the business of just dropping a project plan in your lap. And verse 9 really drives that part home. In their hearts, humans plan their course, but the Lord establishes their steps. And there's that word again, establish. You plan, that's your job. You can map out the steps to reach your goal, but only the Lord can establish those steps. He gives them a firm foundation. And those are some great insights on plans, but in the way of Proverbs, we got to change topics entirely, and now we're moving to the middle of the chapter. There's a series of Proverbs here about kings, and it's important to recognize the voice in these Proverbs. Read verse 12 with me. Kings detest wrongdoing, but a throne is established through righteousness. Now, you could read that to say that all kings detest wrongdoing. Well, that just isn't true. It is demonstrably false because many kings do wrong both in and out of the Bible. But here in Proverbs, the voice here is one spoken to the king. It's like King David telling young Solomon, "This is how a noble king rules, a righteous one. Kings detest wrong. Son, your throne will be established by doing right." So with that clarification, Peyton, you have the next verse.
Verse 13 says, "Kings take pleasure in honest lips. They value the one who speaks what is right." I'm going to read that again from the easy-to-read version. Kings want to hear the truth. They like those who are honest. How would you feel if everyone always told you what they thought you wanted to hear? That might sound great until you think about being a king, governor, parent, or boss of a company where every decision you make affects people's lives. Having people be honest with you and give you counsel suddenly becomes very valuable because it shows that they care about the same things you do as king, that you care more about others than you do yourself. Kings take pleasure in honest lips. That's a person who can be trusted. Of course, I'll tuck this one away in case I ever become king. But until then, I still value people who tell me the truth. I value the one who speaks what is right.
And of course, that works in the reverse as well, as you have opportunity to speak to kings, to your boss, to anyone in power, anybody that you want to impress. They will value honest lips. Be honest with them, even when it's difficult, and they will value you. Good stuff. And moving from kings to warriors, Chase has one of my most often used proverbs when I speak to young men. Chase, take us to verse 32.
Verse 32 says, "Better a patient person than a warrior, one with self-control than one who takes a city." Today, our modern world has certain things it values. In the days this proverb was written, this would have been no different. Being a mighty warrior was worthy of honor and what was seen of great value. Now, I agree, those skills are awesome. With a martial arts background myself, for almost the entirety of my childhood and teen years, Bruce Lee was my hero. Yet this proverb says becoming patient and full of self-control is to be valued and sought after even more than having impressive skills on a battlefield. And this points out something very important. Character matters. Especially as the people of God, we want others to be able to see the beauty of who our God is. And even though none of us will do this perfectly, a person's character who's being transformed to be more like his is quite powerful in our testimony about him.
That verse is so good. This is actually one of my go-to verses for talking to young men. I like to give a young man that verse and just let them wrestle over it, especially if they're struggling with their temper or they feel like they need to show their strength. How is it that patience makes one stronger than a warrior? How does self-control make you stronger than a conqueror? Such a powerful statement. Just wrestle over that one. All right, Peyton, you've got verse 23 for us. Keep us moving forward.
Verse 23, "The hearts of the wise make their mouths prudent, and their lips promote instruction." Let's read that again in the easy-to-read version. "Wise people always think before they speak, so what they say is worth listening to." My grandpa tried to teach me a few maxims like this one as a child. Think before putting your mouth into gear. And better to have someone think you're a fool than open your mouth and remove all doubt. That fortune cookie wisdom may seem a bit trite, but it's true. Wise people always think before they speak. Next time you're wanting to answer, let it marinate in your mind a few more seconds before you respond or jump into a conversation.
Think before you speak. That is pure wisdom. Or as James puts it, be slow to speak, slow to anger, but quick to to listen. Now, to close out the chapter, guys, I actually have a little story. Yesterday, I was listening to this chapter, preparing for this, listening on audio while I was running at the beach. It's a great place to focus. Now, on our schedule, we were supposed to be done with Proverbs a couple weeks ago, but a whole series of things delayed us, all unplanned, all threw off my plans. So now I'm actually prepping for Esther while I'm also studying Proverbs. It's not ideal for me, but of course I can pivot. So I queue up both audio before I go for my run. Now, first I listen to Proverbs 16. My plans, God's response, lots of good stuff. But then comes this verse, the very last verse, and I could never wrap my mind around this one. Verse 33 says, "The lot is cast into the lap, but its every decision is from the Lord." Okay, so casting a lot is like the ancient version of rolling dice, only this is for making a decision. Many cultures used it. The Hebrew idea was to find God's will. Now, I have to admit, as a math and statistics teacher, throwing dice for God's will just doesn't land neatly in my brain. Is this verse saying that God controls every roll of the dice? Is he forcing me to land on Marvin Gardens in Monopoly? I don't think that's what it says. I think you land on chance by chance. Ecclesiastes says, time and chance happen to everyone. God built the universe with chance, possibility, probability, even luck sometimes. Divine fatalism is not a biblical concept. Yes, God knows the end, but I believe that the life he gave us is more canvas than script. But I also believe that God works all things for good for those who love him and who are called according to his purpose. And there's the rub. How does God's purpose come together with my plans and random chance? So there I am running. I hear this verse again. The lot is cast into the lap, but its every decision is from the Lord. It bounced around my mind for a little bit and I let it go. Chapter's over, so I queue up my Esther study and I keep on running. Now, I'm not going to tell you how this story ends, but out of nowhere, that verse, that same verse that I was struggling with, cracked open the book of Esther for me. Like, so much just fell into place. And it's all about God working in the hidden places. And I just sat there and I marveled over the long sequence of random events that went wrong according to my plans that all lined up those two studies on the same run to give me one phenomenal insight. How does God do that? Now, I like stats and I like probabilities, but I love when God defies them and just brings improbable things together. Now, I'm going to leave it there. If you want to know the rest and you want to know the insight, you got to join me in my Esther study. But for now, read Proverbs 16, make your plans, trust God's purpose, and we'll see you next time.
Join us next time as we continue the journey, one chapter at a time. And remember, faith comes by hearing, and hearing through the word.